One of my favorite musicians, Jimmy Smith, on his trusty Hammond B3 organ with The Sermon. It's also the title track of his 1958 album. Yes, I like the oldies. I really do. But this is one of my favorites. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trace Lead, and I'm talking to you from a rather chilly South Florida. Last time I looked, it was 54 degrees. So the cold that is about to descend on the Northeast is also about to descend. It has descended on the Southeast as well. All right, a couple of things that we're going to be talking about, and I don't want to say this as a way of patting myself on the back, but you would recall last year when two black men were arrested at a Starbucks in Philadelphia, and the ensuing tra-la-la around it. And we had so many different views about it, but mostly we said, you know, these guys folded like two cheap suits. They were wrongfully arrested because the manager of that Starbucks thought that they were in Starbucks and they were in the store for too long without having spent enough money in ordering anything. The fact was that they were waiting for another person to show up in order to have a meeting. The person had not yet arrived, so, you know, they had their cups of coffee and were waiting. The manager basically ordered them out. They refused to leave. She called the police and then ordered the police to arrest them for trespassing, which they obliged and did. And of course, it blew up as it should have, and it became an embarrassment. And soon enough, Starbucks went into full impact attenuating mode. It held a day-long orientation for its employees and featured mostly black people from the NAACP and other organizations to chill people out and to educate them about how to treat human beings. Now, in the middle of all that, I said this was a very strategic move, and it worked. because not only did it chill out the protests that were building around this issue, it put the CEO of Starbucks in a very good light. What he kept saying was, "This is not, these are not the standards of our company, and we've got to get this thing harnessed right away." And they did a lot of stuff in one day. And as I said, you may recall, I'm prescient about these things. I'm visionary about these things. I can see between the lines, you see? And I'm saying this because this is really how we are to look at things analytically. So that when, as it has occurred, the CEO of Starbucks has announced that he is thinking of running for president, this is the direct fallout or the direct outgrowth of what happened in April in Philadelphia. All right, so Starbucks gained a lot of ground, a lot of mileage, and all of it, I would say practically all of it. I put the word practically in there. Practically all of it brought about by black people. You will recall that I severely criticized the two men who refused to even acknowledge that the people in the store who were very upset about what they had witnessed had come forward. And they wanted no part of that. So we still don't know to this day whether how much money they settled for, but there supposedly was some kind of a settlement. And after that, we had this one-day teach-in in which all Starbucks employees were to be educated about how you treat customers as if, I mean, you have to stretch it as if they actually are human beings. And that provided the springboard, as I said then. I said it then. This is how people operate when they understand that they can make a situation work for them. And it only took a year, just a little bit of a year, that Mr. Starbucks has decided to explore the possibility of a presidential run. The fact that he could even do that was helped immeasurably by the fact that black people, including those who were subjected to intolerable treatment by his company, provided nonetheless and were manipulated into a situation where they made him look so good. That was, as I remarked then, that was great leadership. He performed spectacularly, and it didn't take long. He absolutely quashed any protest that would originate in the African-American community. He gave everybody the impression this was a progressive company, a forward-looking company, and they were not going to tolerate this kind of racism. He got black people to show up from the NAACP to assist in the education of Starbucks employees as to how to treat Negroes. And in one fell swoop, he took care of business. He negated a protest that was building with the aid of the two men who were so poorly treated. And here we are today. The news is, of course, that he is thinking of running for president in 2020 as, get this, as an independent progressive. Alrighty then. Now, why I bring this up is to say to you, when things like that happen, you just pause for a minute and you do some thinking. You analyze the situation and you practically can predict the outcome, as I did. On the very day they held this seminar, this store-wide seminar, I predicted, this is the kind of thing, don't be surprised, this is the kind of thing that would give him a shot at the presidency. So you see, it's really not that tough. All you have to do is pay attention. And you see how people move, how the moving parts are reorganized to achieve an objective. And we need to keep in mind, all of this is happening on the strength of Black people. This is all coming about as a result of Black people who, even back then, including the, and especially the two young men who were so poorly treated, rather than them standing firm in the situation, they caved. We don't know whether they got a lot of money or a little bit of money or no money. We don't know all of that. But we do know that had they just understood the moment that they were in, perhaps they might have acted differently. But instead, on the heels of their pain and suffering, they have actually given birth to the possibility of a presidential candidacy. All righty then. So when I say to you that you don't have to be told things, all you have to do is pay attention. All you have to do is observe carefully. You are well equipped to make sense of the universe. You're not going to be able to do it all the time, but most of the time you'll get it right. You'll see what is happening if you pay attention. And this is a time in which we need to pay attention. Because believe me, we are all in the crosshairs of somebody else's plans. And we would be crazy not to pay attention to the hints that we see all along. Now, I've been talking about President Trump since the day one. I've been remarking about his unusual conduct and behavior. The evidence was so clear that this was a man with a very uneven mind, a troubled mind, a chaotic mind. In fact, you may recall, I called him President Chaos. I outlined all the evidence, and it was only, he was in office only for a short time, but the evidence was so overwhelming and so consistent that it boggled the mind that people who are in a position to do something about it could miss it. And the only reason that they would miss it is that they have other plans. They really believe that this president actually believes in his duties, what he's supposed to do and not do. And they also believe that he is not what he clearly was. They still believe he is not what he clearly is. So, what is our job in such an environment? Our job is to pay attention, to be alert, and to the best of our ability to cushion ourselves for what we know is inevitable. And what is inevitable is total chaos. And any time there is chaos in America, just look at the history. Every time there is a chaotic moment for the nation, all the people of the nation don't suffer. All the people of the nation don't pay an equal price. When there is chaos, it is understood who will do the suffering. And still people are acting as if, well, it's not going to be true with Trump. It's not going to happen that way. Well, may I say one word to you called shutdown? Now, what in any normal leader's mind would cause a leader to wake up one day and say, you know what? I'm going to hold up your checks, your paychecks. You're not going to get paid. I'm going to hold you as my personal hostage. Why? Because I want to build a wall. It costs $5.7 billion. And that's just for raw materials, by the way. The other billions, which are not being discussed, will have to do with staffing and managing this wall. It will have to do with constructing courts to process the people caught at the wall. It will have to do with all the security, attendant security issues in securing the wall. All right. So that's another couple of billion. So by the time this wall is completed, we're talking not 5.7 billion, we're up in the teens of billions. Okay. Now, did this conversation come up as it ought to have in as a matter of course in Congress? And people, you ask, you're thinking that this would be a very good thing to enhance the security of the country by securing the border at the southern end. And we've talked here on this program about, it's interesting that the border at the northern end where white people are coming in illegally, those borders are okay. They don't need walls. They don't need walls. The border with Canada, no need for a wall. Plus, we know the truth is most illegal immigration into the United States is occurring at the airport and on its coastline. They're not scaling walls to come. But there is such a blatantly racist approach to this whole thing. So Trump gets to claim that illegal immigration, which is turning the economy upside down, is the work, the handiwork of demons from Central and South America. They're the ones. His wife gets to come into the country under an Einstein visa. An Einstein visa she gets. That's right. Visa created to rescue exceptionally brilliant and valuable people who contribute to the world, as Einstein did with his theories and with science. But there's always an exception. So this immigration policy, of which we have none, we have no policy, by the way. The policy is to demonize and utilize the weapon of white supremacy and racism to distract people from thinking logically about what is the problem here. And the problem here, in my view, is that we have no cogent policy. To have a cogent policy, it will have to take into consideration all aspects of immigration. But that's not what intended. That is not what is wanted. Immigration in the minds of Americans must mean what those damn people from Central and South America are trying to do to America. Messing up your DNA, overrunning your cities. They're responsible for crimes, serious crimes, murder and rape. That's the thinking that has to be inculcated. So when you say immigration, it means Mexicans, Hondurans, Ecuadorians. That's what immigration means. And here's what's so funny. It means people taking jobs. They just rounded up more than a dozen people from one of Trump's own properties who were working in the United States illegally. And he knew it for years. And the reason they work on Trump's properties is because he hates the idea of paying them what they're worth. Now, I'm coming back to this business of how we are to take these things and think about these things. And what is coming down the pike is totally chaotic. We have to guard against being used as fodder for a very venal, nasty kind of action that this government will be taking shortly. And all the psychological props will be used, of patriotism, of Americanism, and all of that stuff. They versus us. Or we, I should be more grammatically correct. They versus we. People are coming to take what we have. And we now have to be part of the fight against it. When in fact, most of us have a history that says it's simply an update from the years of our parents and grandparents and great grandparents and great great grandparents. They didn't see an invasion because they oversaw the invasion called slavery. They regulated it. They profited immensely by it. They built a country on the basis of slavery and great wealth, generational wealth. So this was an intended situation. What is happening with the migrants today is that this is unintended. This is unregulated. They don't have a handle on it. And so they absolutely must do everything to control it. Well, I have an idea. You want $5.7 billion. I think that's easily done, if that's what you want. You're sending $93 billion to Israel every year so that it can secure its borders through killing, bombing, etc. Seems to me that you have access to money, big money. But instead, because this is out of the head of Zeus, a very messed up Zeus, the idea is also to convey the other part of the plan that is in construction. But you still have to, along the way, you have to show people that there is progress on your plan. The progress is, I can take away the paychecks of 800,000 people. More people than the population of several small countries. I can do that. I don't have to ask Congress anything. I don't have to talk to them. I could just, by presidential fiat, I could make that happen. And then, when it is so clear that this is so wrong, so illegal, so undemocratic, so, dare I say it, un-American. It's more Nazi than American. You make the same people suffer so much. You tell them, look, go to food outlets, go to charity organizations and get your food. Borrow money. Do what you have to do. Because you're American and you're doing this for your country. You're suffering for your country. What greater privilege could you have? In the meantime, while their checks are held up, Ivanka Trump is being paid. Her vampiric husband is being paid. All the people who see nothing wrong with other people not being paid are being paid. Members of Congress are being paid. They see nothing wrong with it. The Secretary of Commerce says he cannot understand why people can't solve this small problem of not being paid. Go get a loan, he says. Go borrow some groceries from your neighbors. Because you will eventually be able to pay them back. That is a plan with this administration. Meanwhile, the failure here, and it's only just a little bit more than a month, is racking up billions of dollars in deficits all over the place. Now, the average person could understand how stupid this is, how unnecessary and how stupid, but it is important. Because it gets done a whole bunch of things that we would think would be, you know, not so important. But to them, because they are the rulers. And they have fully, that's the evidence is showing, they've fully internalized that. They are the ruling elite. They've understood that. They have come to understand and embrace it. And Trump has produced and continues to produce evidence that that is the reality. He has made this reality come about. Oh, democracy and all that nonsense. You either are rich, i.e. powerful in this country, and have a say in how things are to be managed in this country, or you're not. You could be stupid beyond belief, hopelessly unqualified. You could have a quarter of a brain, but you still will be in charge because you're a member of the moneyed elite. And if you're not a member of the moneyed elite, you're one of them. We're not concerned about them. The people who are them have to go and ask their neighbors for food and take out loans in order to pay their bills, having been furloughed from jobs that were supposed to be the equivalent in the United States of the much talked about iron rice bowl of China. When you have a job, you have a job. And you thinking of your future, your children's future, that is not part of the plan now. The problem that still persists is that we have people who are dodging. They know the game being played. But to get by, they have a need also to belong in the group that's the moneyed elite. Even if they don't have money, as long as they have the elitism going for them, they follow along and take their cues from a bunch of really maladjusted people who long ago took on the attitude that if you are not rich in this country, you don't deserve to live in this country. Being rich is all that it's about. And now that attitude has basically infected all these other sectors of our society. Everybody wants to be rich. And quickly. You're not in this business of, building from generation to generation. They want to make their money now. And the same accusations they make of other countries where corruption is so endemic. Everything is corrupt. Even the church is corrupt. The priests are corrupt. School principals are corrupt. House keepers are corrupt. Everybody's corrupt. And looking to cut corners and take the shortest route to fabulous wealth and the hell with everybody else. That's the society we have now. And because the United States is a leading nation of the world, it exports its sickness to other societies. Every country is under the yoke of the same kind of mentality. Stupid people, corrupt people are in charge, making money hand over fist, while right at their feet are people who are suffering terribly. It's their fault. Nobody told them to be poor. That's their choice. And they have to live with their poor choices. Imagine Ivanka Trump was being promoted for the position of head of the World Bank. This is the madness that goes on. Absolute madness. And that's the period we're in. Manufactured madness, and all efforts are being made to get us, do not concentrate on that. That's not something you should be thinking about. We've got it. We've got everything in check. All you have to do is to shut up and let us do our thing. For one thing, you don't know anything. You're a bunch of ignorant people. Two, this is the first phase of really reintroducing in America white supremacy. If we keep forgetting that, we keep thinking of some kind of strange idea that this is a land where people have a decent shot at life, where a job is supposed to help you provide for your family and yourself and secure you. All these things, they've shot these things down a long time ago. And they're now building or rebuilding and reconstructing a white supremacist world in this country. Okay. I've just looked at the list of topics I haven't yet talked about, but we are really at the halfway mark of the program, and it's only fair that you should have something to say and contribute. So I'll pause, we'll take a break, and come back to your thoughts on the question right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. We're talking about regaining some sense within ourselves, trusting. Trust what you know. Trust what you're understanding, because it gives you a clue, a very good clue, an important clue, as to how you are to function in a society that has become almost totally dysfunctional. And there are reasons for it, and we can't ignore them. 888-874-4888. Marcus from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Well, thank you, Ms. Lead. Always a great pleasure to be lifted by your erudition and dedication. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your participation in the program. What have you to say?
Well, the point you made earlier about people can be as stupid as they can possibly be, this was something pointed out by Adam Smith as well, if you let capitalists rule. You know, the first time I had the pleasure of speaking with you months ago, I pointed out the appalling educational numbers of the U.S. population. In fact, we are as stupid as we can be. Now, the system that's in control, the rich oligarchy that you describe, made it that way. They prefer it that way. And since they actually own the system we live under, they don't see any reason that they shouldn't receive the adulation of the suckers by actually openly running the system. This is the most significant thing about Trump's election and the fact that, for instance, the U.S. Senate has been a millionaire's club for 100 years. Look, academics who study ancient Rome will tell you that, for instance, Caligula, you know, they'll argue about whether he was technically insane or not, but they'll all agree he was self-indulgent and completely unpredictable as a ruler, you know, no moral responsibility, completely unsuited to governing. He had no training, no talent for administration, but he had a famous family name, and the army saw him as useful. Now, regardless of their politics, any Roman scholar will tell you that the reason Caligula came to power was inevitable because of the Roman imperial system. Now, see, academics can say that about some crap that happened in 480 AD because it won't affect their careers. But you can't say it now because it will. So it is because you have this kind of chokehold on knowledge, which the rich have imposed over a long period of time. Americans are basically illiterate. They can't even do basic arithmetic. People are unable, and education is not about, do you know all the dates that things happened? It's, can you elucidate a principle from what's going on around you? In science, in any department of life, the important thing is not the details, it's the structure. The structure determines what's going to happen. So, for instance, since over the last few weeks, since you have been admonishing your listeners to dare to look at how they are complicit in this monstrosity and what should they themselves be doing, you experienced what I have been experiencing for 45 years. It's not that they argue with you. It's not that they deny they're complicit. It's that they just don't hear it. It can't get in. The information is unthinkable. You see, that's what the media and the educational system has conditioned them to do. So, for instance, since you've broached this topic over the last 2 or 3 weeks, you've had lots and lots of callers who I have clearly been proud to identify themselves as Christians in one facet or another. Now, what did Jesus of Nazareth do with the money changers in the temple? That story is in Matthew. That story is in Mark. That story is in John. Now, I am no Christian. I think religion is lunacy, but I realize that to understand what's motivating the people who do believe it, I have to study it. So I did. Well, even King James scholars realized, well, this seems to be pretty important parable, a pretty important parable in the text. So I'm going to reiterate it, make sure it's iterated and reiterated 3 times. And yet Christians cannot elucidate the principle behind the parable, which is, you know, it's in Mark where he talks about, you know, the chances of the rich man getting into heaven are the same as the camel passing through the eye of the needle and all that. Christians can't figure it out. Now, this is the problem. The real problem is that people can't understand a basic principle right in front of their faces from their own creed. Now,
well,
this is a failure of, I mean, this bespeaks a kind of intellectual laziness that's just breathtaking.
Well, I wouldn't be so condemning. What we also have to understand is...
I'm not condemning.
What I mean by a harsh in our criticism of people who are not yet understanding. That, too, is a function of how systems work. They work to deceive. They work to deprive you of good information. They work to of information, period. All oppressed people experience this. This is not unique. So, but you did give us, you put on the table some very important points for us to consider. And thank you. Thank you for doing so. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Trace.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
Well, I bet you're hanging in better in Florida than we are up here. It's freaking freezing, okay? I think I'm still even about like to be with your lawn man today rather than up here. But anyway, I was driving home the other day when I heard you talking about Venezuela, and I wanted to call in, but I couldn't. To tell you that I had heard it on the TV and I had heard it on NPR. And since then, I have not stopped hearing it wall to wall, like a cement wall, a liquid cement wall of lies coming down, and particularly from NPR. And then over the weekend, I heard a good Democratic Senator, Donna Shalala, tell us how wonderful the United States was and that we don't attack people. We always try diplomacy first, except for I 100% agree with you. This country did nothing to us. And we're standing over them, ready to attack them, and we are facilitating a coup d'etat. And it's breathtaking to me that after we've been in war for 20 years with a country that has not attacked us, and the blatancy of this one. This one to me was even, I guess, the most raw and blatant act of aggression so far that I've seen. I you know, even with the Iraq thing. Maybe because Iraq was further away that, you know, I marched against that. I was in the anti-war movement. But the lies and the propaganda, that's what's stunning to me. Because I think that even with Iraq, we still had radio stations, NPR, a lot of publicity pushing back, at least at the validity of what they were saying, you know, asking, is this really true? Now, ultimately, they got their way, but they had to wrestle with this for a while. I mean, even Congress had to, you know, wrestle with it. But this, we're going to go in, and this guy, whether people like it or not, he's elected. And I agree with you. I mean, Trump is a piece of crap, and he's elected. But you know, if Nancy Pelosi stood up tomorrow and said, guess what, I'm the new president of the United States, I don't think people would be going along with it. And so what's really breathtaking to me is the propaganda machine. It's just grinding that sausage, at least in my lifetime. This is the most I've ever seen it. And when I listen to good stations like WWNYC and NPR and the BBC, and these places that, you know, are supposed to be left-leaning, and these Democrats that claim to be left-leaning, except for when it comes to this war. And it was stunning to me that on CNN over the weekend, I heard Mike Pompeo come out on the TV and say, look, pick a side. And people did
pick a side, just
as you said they would. Russia and China lined up with Venezuela. But the sad part of all this is that it looks like this is a thump on socialism. And the United States is letting the world know, don't even try it. Don't even try it, because we will smash you down in a heartbeat. And, you know, I got to tell you what is really unbelievable about this is that when I listen to the lack of information the commentators provide, I want you to know my parents used to go to Venezuela when I was little. They used to go down on vacation, and my father always came home and told me it was hard to believe that how poor that country was. It's stunningly poor. And so they keep talking on the TV about 10 years ago how this nation was, you know, in pretty good shape. Well, yeah, it was in pretty good shape because Hugo Chavez took over. That's why the country was in good shape. That's why some of the wealth trickled down to some of the poorer residents. Now, you know, did it work like a charm? Well, there's always going to be problems no matter what. But I think the intention was to have that country, have everybody have a little bit of something and not be so destitute. But to sit and listen to people talk, and then when I try to bring it up with some friends, just acquaintances, but just that I like to get people's, you know, I want to hear what they have to say. And everybody, like sheep, immediately say, well, they're not so good on human rights. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, like half of our population that's black is sitting in prison right now. Like, I don't know. We have the second largest prison population in the world behind China. And you think that's great. And, you know, almost every single day of the week, somebody's black is getting shot to death with impunity. No policeman's going to jail. We can't talk about a police state. You can't say that. But I believe that's truly where we are, because if you can shoot and kill somebody with impunity as frequently as we see it happening, well, then to me, you know, you only have the veneer of a democracy. I do not believe we have a democracy. I don't believe that that's so anymore. But it's stunning to me how people are willing to accept such frivolous reasons for us to go over and attack this country, except for, as I said, it looks like Maduro is probably going to capitulate to the United States. There were four other countries that have also we've gone after over the last 10 years. And Haiti was one of them. And you know, he left the country while the United States was telling him, you better, you know, get out of here and get good and gone. But I just can't believe how just regular, plain old American citizens are basically saying it's okay to go and steal. Look, we have the right to go in and steal their country. We have the right to judge them. I mean, they're not lining people up and throwing them in the ovens over there. There is a civil war going on, and even if it's just a mentally civil war, very much like the one you have in America, where there's, you know, there's the oligarchs who want everything. And so they have the money, and to me, they're facilitating these riots in the streets. They've made a lot of this happen, and I believe that we've also made it happen. We are making it happen over here. We're the ones that are messing with their economy, and we're not going to allow them to get out of line and have a socialistic country. We're just not going to do it. And it's a very important thing for people to recognize. It's a symptom of what's to come in the future. I mean, more and more we see the entire world being locked down with dictators, including this country. We have a dictator essentially as our president. Now, he hasn't pushed it all the way to the max yet, but he is definitely seeking that. You've got one now in Brazil. You've got one in North Korea. I mean, you've got one all over the place. You've got dictators, and it seems to be that there's no pushback from regular citizens. Nobody's standing up. And I just wanted to tell you that I did hear much news about it, although all of the news to me was completely biased, inaccurate, and fabricated.
Well, I believe that within, by tomorrow, or certainly by Wednesday, there will be one heck of an inferno in Venezuela. As we've talked, it's been building and building, but the United States is blatantly open about its agenda and its intention, which is to destroy the country, hand it over to this 35-year-old guy who just decided that he's the new president. He was confirmed by Donald Trump. Britain is confirming him as the new president. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. Are we all on some kind of acid trip or something that we forget that this is a nation? And outside interference, especially at this level, should routinely, automatically be condemned. We're not hearing that. But we're seeing the buildup, the military buildup. We're seeing warships in the area. We're seeing planes flying over, just getting the lay of the land kind of thing. So it tells me that there's going to be a dramatic development within 2 days. I wouldn't be surprised if it's tomorrow, but within 2 days, you'll see just how what is planned for Venezuela, as we've been talking here. Thanks a lot.
Very sad.
Gwen,
thank you.
Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. We certainly will get to Venezuela tomorrow. It was supposed to be on the menu today, but I didn't get to it. I wanted instead to drive home the point that pay attention and do some thinking, no matter what is being said, like Gwen just demonstrated. So we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.